Ciao ragazzi, how are we? Mike, look tired. Ottavio, tired. Long weekend.
Yeah, mate. It's been an exciting weekend, mate. Tuckered is the answer. Yeah. How you been? Are you good?
Yeah, I'm good. And I think we better give a congratulations to you, Mike. It was a big weekend for you in more ways than one. So why don't you tell the listeners what you've been up to this weekend?
Thank you. Always appreciate that as well. So it was a fantastic weekend of rugby, but aside that as well, it was a pretty sort of special moment for me and my other half. We'd been dating almost 10 years now, and yeah, she's been very patient with me. So finally got her the ring made up to the exact specifics that she she wanted. I empathized a lot with Seba actually in that thing. Every time there was a jeweler, she'd give me a good idea. So thanks so much, mate. It was a pretty special weekend. So
applauso,
bravo.
Appreciate it, boys. Appreciate it.
Nice one. I think we will start with obviously the first round of Six Nations. Ireland beating France on Friday night in a pretty impressive performance. Italy just missing out against England with a late try, getting a losing bonus point. Also, most points scored against England in Six Nations history, I believe. So positives there. And then a pretty thrilling game. The kind of classic game of two halves, literally, is the best way of describing it, I think. Well, game of two halves and plus about 3 minutes. Scotland 27 then up and Wales scoring 26 unanswered points to just miss out in what was a great finish in Cardiff. But we will start with Italy against England. Italy 24, England 27. Ottavio, first, you were out there on press duties for the podcast. How was that experience for you? Did you have an enjoyable weekend?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was great. So let's say thank you to all the federation to allow us to be there. That's very important. I wasn't the only content creator, podcaster. There were other guys too, which is nice when you see people that you know maybe and you met for the first time. Of course, we got the time to spend a couple of days with Mike, and it was great. But with the federation, everything was great there because we were there during the captain's run. You didn't watch any of our contents, go on Instagram and Twitter because we post many
yes,
stuff.
We worked
there.
Very hard. We worked hard, didn't we?
We were pretty hard. Quick.
Whilst pretty Mike quick. Drank.
Yeah. I was out of the picture, sadly.
No, great. Mike was great. The greatest translator ever, I can say.
Yes.
For a World Cup champion. So. Anyway, that was great. Great. The atmosphere was nice. Even there, you see the respect between each other. You see the excitement about the game growing during the minutes, and awesome, actually.
And Mike, we did start the weekend with the trip to the Rugby Museum in Rome. So I think we should touch on that first of all. Like Ottavio said, we put some stuff up on our Instagram and our TikTok as well about that. So do go and check those out. But that was a really cool experience. It looked really good in there. And you obviously met Lewis Moody, who is now an official friend of the podcast, and Mauro Bergamasco as well.
Yeah. It's absolutely surreal. For those of you guys who don't know where this museum is, it's in a town just outside of Rome called Arterna. And Ottavio was kindly taxi duty when we went. He was brilliant, sort of picking me up and kindly dropping me off afterwards as well. But it's a stunning little museum. It's at the top of very picturesque a town on the side of a hill, and we met I met, because obviously I know Ottavio met him before, Leo, who obviously is another fratello of our rugby pod, who does a lot of the coaching stuff with Otto. If you haven't caught that, there's There's some really good stuff that will link in. But he actually runs and owns the
Mr. Corrado.
Corrado, yeah. So that's Leo's dad. So yeah, it's surreal. Some of the history in that museum is second to none. Stuff far beyond what I expected for this sort of like quite out the way museum. Stuff like Gareth Edwards' shirt of the game that didn't happen, and they have Francois Pienaar's shirt in the 1995. Well, that's just history listed all over the place, and I really don't want to undersell it. You know, it's a good experience to go out there, I think, and if you can go, because it's obviously self-supported, like they do it, you know, to grow the game in Italy, and that's a big component of what we're trying to achieve. So yeah honestly, March, like next time we're in Rome, like we're going again, like we need to go. It's such an experience.
Well, yeah, so for all the listeners, I was the poor mug that had to stay home, wasn't able to get out to Rome, so I've done this all from back home in England this weekend. So we will move on to the game itself, so I'll lead off on that, given I was the one watching it sort of live on the TV at the time. Again, like I said, with the Wales-Scotland game, it was a little bit of a tale of two halves, in the sense that Italy started really well, scored some really, really lovely tries in that first half. And at 17-8 at one point, it really did feel like something special was happening. And even at halftime at 17-11, managed to frustrate England, managed to compete really well in all facets of the game. It felt like something was on the cards. And then I think second half, some errors crept in. We lost our momentum, we lost our way a little bit, and England, with maybe perhaps a little bit more experience than us, being able to deal with that a little bit better, was generally the way the game went. They get ahead, they keep ahead with penalties, and then ultimately we maybe had chances in that second half. I think, you know, potentially if Tommy Allen kicks that penalty at, what was it, 24-17, I think, to bring it back to 4 points, you know, might have been a different story, and maybe the end result would have been a little bit different. But we finished strongly with a losing bonus point try, which I think I'd seen on one of our group chats was quite an important thing for us, maybe, that instead of losing by 17 points and shipping a try right at the end, in the red zone, sort of 82nd minute of the game, England are knocking on the door, to be able to hold them out, win the penalty, and score a try to get that losing bonus point was pretty impressive. So that's about that game. I mean, we'll go into a lot more detail. Mike, you've been through it all today, going back over it. So I'll come to you first. We'll start with that first half. What did we do that impressed you?
So I think you sort of hit the nail on the head a little bit about frustrating England. One thing that really impressed me with the game was England thought early, and why wouldn't they, that they would be able to kick to touch and bully us in the mall. But as soon as they realised that it was slightly more sturdier than perhaps last year, they were sort of struggling to come up with some ideas, and that's where they opted to kick. But the simple fact that we were able to repel at times, and like you said, frustrate and just probably get under sort of the English skin a little bit, the players' skin, in terms of like not bending to their will at set piece, which is obviously a core component of a Stephen Borthwick side, is a long part as to why they were kicking at goal, because they were like this defense is actually pretty good. And I think the numbers sort of mark up as well. I believe it was 114 tackles in the first half, if I'm not mistaken, and we finished the game with over 90% tackle success. So it's one of those where like we really showed a change, and I think we all asked ourselves right at the start of this Six Nations, like what is it that we want to see? And one thing, sort of stealing a little bit from like Gatland's philosophy, is I want us to become a team that's really difficult to beat. And if we can play like we did this weekend against, you know, the other opposition, I think we're going to cause people some problems, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Otavio, I know you've only watched up to about 36 minutes watching the game back. So in those 36 minutes, what was sort of maybe from more, a bit of more of an analytical viewpoint, what did we do well? Was it a case of us frustrating England, or were England a little bit inaccurate?
Look, I think in the first half, we did well. Those opportunity ball in hands, they were pretty good, because the first offside, we got the 3 points, and then we create these two tries really well. There was structure there, but also there were the skills, because we score with the two offloads there, Brex, Cannone for the supporting line of Garbisi. And the second one, when you see Menoncello, soft hands under pressure, double pump and pass inside on the left, like we are saying in the car, Mike, that's great to see stuff like that working. Of course, on the other side, you have that try. You cannot leave the inside free for Tommy Freeman, actually, in that moment for Garbisi. That it's something that you, in theory, you have to be a little bit more... just leaving the outside, not the inside. He beat him in the inside, because, like, in Italy we say, he baptized the pass. No, like he said, okay, he's gonna pass the ball, so I'm gonna just drift instead, and then wait until the last moment, and then move and push out. So that probably sucks. But man, first half we were winning the first half. Penalties, maybe in our 22, maybe in our 50s, like the tackle without the ball from Ceccarelli, those are 3 points. We can do a little bit better. That was really good for that, showing and then keeping the ball there. But that was a great tackle if Freeman was going to take the ball. Stewart, sorry. We can be better, actually, than that. But the first half, I can say, was pretty good from us, but we were super tired. I think that was my perception from the stadium too. Last minute was really long.
Yeah, and maybe Mike, that's where we fall off a bit in the second half. Is we put a lot into that first half, didn't we? And when the errors start coming in and you start dropping the ball and the frustration creeps in a little bit, that's when it all sort of culminates in England getting back into that game, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think England played very closely to the line, which forced a lot of our players to make decisions. And actually, for the most part, I think they made the right decisions. But like Otto said, there's definitely some stuff for the boys to work on in terms of, you know, like don't want to pick on Checker, but Ceccarelli with that tackle off the ball, he made a decision because he thought the ball was going there, right? Like it's just like an honest mistake. But there's other ones sort of across the line where we need to trust our players to make the right decision, and unfortunately they didn't. But yeah, you're right, like constantly having sort of to be mentally alert to what England were doing. And actually I think England played pretty well. I know a lot of people are sort of fairly disparaging of England, but I actually thought that was quite a good performance from them. I just think they just expected us to roll over. Whereas actually we provide a bit more of a fight. So yeah, a lot of decision making, like you said, at the sort of 60 minute mark, like England sort of just understood what they needed to do, and they were just like, okay, cool, we're just going to defend, and we're going to capitalize, because we're going to go vicious at line speed, we're going to force you to make knock-ons and stuff. So I think it's just a little bit about fatigue, but I think that's discrediting England. I think England changed the tactics and reverted to what they do best, which is be big, be physical. And I mean, Marla carried so many different times in that second half where they actually had some ascendancy, and they, you know, every time he does a fake dummy as well. I don't know if you guys notice, every time it's like a little show and go, but he's not dancing feet. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, so I think it's an element of two. Yes, we probably got a little bit tired from the first half, but I think England changed the way that they played against us, which is why they were more successful in the second half. Certainly in the first sort of, well, first 20, 30 minutes of the second half.
And Ottavio, for you, a little look at some of those individual performances. I think one of the big points that we've talked about going into this tournament is the way we kick the ball, our exit strategies. What did you make of Garbisi in that sense? Because I thought at times, I've seen someone pick up on his actual kicking style from hand, which I don't think helps him when we're trying to kick the ball out of dangerous positions. The way he holds the ball up really high and then drops it back down to his foot, and it seems to be takes a long time, you know, and in that second half in particular, when we're trying to exit, we're not really getting much distance on those kicks, and that was just putting us under a bit more pressure.
That is something that we have to work for sure with him and with Varney from the stadium. The box kick maybe from Mitchell and Kier, they were outstanding. The time of the ball in the air coming down, and I think on the air battle, the fact that England was really good on covering the catcher, like screening the catcher, that was really good. We let them pass too easily to go and contest the ball a couple of times in the first half too. We did have Roots getting the ball back, but box kicking, yes, is back. Let's say back after 2 years that we did just running from our 22. Can we improve that? Yes. We need to use also the tactical kicks in with a front foot attack, I think. Because, for example, the first kick we did with Garbisi was like a grabber kick behind the line. That came after a couple of situations where the in attack for us, that the ball was really slow. And then you have the set defense, back line defense on third line. So we can do more. We can do more there, but we are at the beginning of that. And actually, Garbisi was at his eighth cap, third try. So for him, yes, well done. But there is something more to do and to improve.
Sure. Mike, one of the standouts then, Tommaso Menoncello, who I'm just delighted with the performance he had and the fact that people are starting to recognise quite how good this man is. And not just in the centre as well, when he's moved onto the wing, he was still, with the little ball he actually did get on the wing, he was making yards, and I don't think there was a single time where he carried the ball and didn't take some defenders with him. And also in that first half when he holds up Tommy Freeman, I think it is, who's looking for all money, he's going to go over, and he manages to almost pick him up and drive him back the other way. Like the guy was brilliant, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's just a freak of nature. And I think those of you guys who are sort of new listeners and haven't heard, Otto March and I bang on about Menoncello for years now, frankly, there is some interesting sort of stuff that have come up in interviews. Like, for example, Guzzi, when he was defensive coach at Benetton, mentioned that he's one of the best young talents he's ever coached. And just cast your mind back into 2018 when England were on that 18 win game streak, and who was in that team. For him to say that, that's incredibly high praise. And now we're starting to see it sort of manifest at this level, where he's actually come in healthy and with a bit of, you know, time under his belt. And I think it's not too far a stretch to say that he's possibly one of the most informed URC centres of, you know, this season. So, you know, England picked on form, and it was almost sort of like happenstance that we picked on form as well, because Benetton are doing well and our players are sort of starting to come of age, and Menoncello has so much more to come. That's the impressive thing. If he keeps up with that growth mindset, like he mentioned in this post-match interview, that he just wants to, you know, each game be slightly better than he was before, we've got a real special player. And we joked, but how nice was it to see him actually pass off his right hand? And, you know, Otto, we were talking about it. If he develops his soft skills, he could be a world beater, like genuine world beater. He's a fantastic player now and could damage probably any nation. But he could very well be what Brian O'Driscoll was to Ireland if he continues to develop at the rate that he's been developing. And I mean that with no irony. Yeah, he's an interesting guy. And if you guys are looking for more little snippets about him, Ian McKinley, when we interviewed him, said exactly what I just said. He said Menon Cello, bearing in mind he saw him in the youth academies, could be like what Brian O'Driscoll was to Ireland. So good to see us using him as much as we possibly can, March.
Yes, good plug. Go.
So Menon Cello was the best carrier for meters for Italy, 110 meters with 11 carries. And after that, the interesting is the player that made more meters carrying into contact, 18 meters to contact. We saw him in the first half, for example, a couple of big carries just off the offline out of set piece. Really well done for him. And the aggregate, let me see some aggregate here. Yes, every time he carried the ball, he gained 10 meters. That's to understand a little bit about this kind of guy.
That's so mega.
A threat, an attacking threat for sure.
That's mad change, isn't it? Like most people consider 3 meters carry. But
give you another one. Post-contact meters for Menon Cello, 39. Only Ioane made more because he scored a try, so he was already into contact the first time when he was tackled, and then after that. And, for example, better than him, actually, not so many into the other team. For now, I can see only Tommy Freeman and Stewart on the opposite team running more. But he was outstanding for us anyway. One of the best for sure.
And what about the set piece? Boys, how did that go? How did you see that, Ottavio? The line out and at scrum time, scrum maybe weakened slightly in the second half.
Weaker at the beginning when Zilocchi came in, then he fixed it, and Spagnolo came in, was really good. So that is something really good. The attitude of Spagnolo against 100 plus caps from Dan Cole there.
Creamed.
Debutant. A debutant coming in.
He
won every exchange, didn't he? Like out of the two, I think two scrum penalties that came, both were Spagnolo, both against Dan Cole when he came on. On round the six, I think from memory, I think it was like 65th, 66th minute. Yeah. How impressive is Spagnolo? Like we were talking about, he could be a really good player at test level, but I genuinely, when I saw Coles come on, I genuinely thought it was going to be a long day for him. But, mate, like, that is genuinely really, really impressive. A debutant against a seasoned World Cup finalist and World Cup third place player. And to do it in the manner that he did it consistently and not losing a single battle against him was, that's pretty special.
Absolutely. Was really good thinking about how, like, he seems he always played this level.
Yeah.
Even the season with Benetton showing that, like, he doesn't care. He goes, he smash, he take also. That's amazing. Line out, we struggle a little bit. We had to understand a couple of movement, and was really good also how they were like one versus one. On the front with Chessum, on the back with Itoje. I mean, last year we were the second best line-out team in the Six Nations. The first team last year was England too.
Mm-hmm. Can I make a quick point on line-out? I was watching the boys warm up. They were literally right in front of me, and Lucchesi was throwing darts. I think I sent that to you, Otto, when I was watching him. He was so accurate, and he was throwing them long as well. So I expected to see a couple of maybe Brex coming in at pace or Menoncello, like your dream march, just over the top. Like,
well, I was going to say, they did try it in the first half, didn't they? They tried it in the first half.
Yeah, I think they had Cannone out the lineup for that one, and he was actually the intended target, but. One thing I'll say is if we can cut out some of the errors or the settling in periods for the lineout, because I think we lost three in the 22. So that's three attacking platforms that we lost. And actually, I think our red zone efficiency was pretty good this game. So if we're going on what we were doing, chances are we probably would have scored from one of those if we managed to get it to hand. So for me, you know, I don't want to be a stickler, but actually for us to go up the next level and compete with the best, and I think this game, if we play this team to play Wales, the team that beat Wales, I think we would have absolutely creamed them with who we have now. And in terms of like the players, it's just when we beat Wales, we were incredibly clinical. We were close to 100%, low penalty count, low handling errors. If this team can replicate that, they could be anyone.
Zero handling errors that game 2 years ago was our best performance about lost ball, knock-ons and stuff. We were almost perfect, Mike, what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, if we're saying, if we use that as the objective, let's say that's 100% for us, right? And that team was playing at 100% of their potential. If this team genuinely plays at 100% of their potential, I think they can cause problems for anyone. And that's not me being sort of, oh, you're an Italian fan. I genuinely believe that. I think there's other teams as well. I think Wales are probably quite similar in that. If they played 100% all the time, they you can say that about lots of teams, but we can say that about us now, genuinely. Yeah.
Marcello, what do you think about the situation with about the team, how developed during the game? You see like up and down from the players too, or you see like a moment when where England push harder, or maybe it's because they were winning, so they were more comfortable?
Yeah, I tend to think when any team, given that we're a side that don't win many games, you know, we've only won once in however many years, I think whenever a team goes behind against us, there's an element of panic and an element of, oh God, we don't want to be that team that gets beaten by Italy type thing. Now, I'm hoping, or we're all hoping, that will sort of change in time, because we know what we're capable of. And I don't think anyone in England was necessarily underestimating us in terms of that first half performance. I think everyone was quite on the same wavelength that Italy just played really well. But I think for England, it was a case of when they managed to get back into it and Italy started to make errors, so we had going into half time, Italy up here and England sort of here. And just as Italy come down, England just push up a little bit. And I think the momentum, once they got that momentum and they got that try that gave them the lead quite early in the second half, I think that gives them a big lift. And then once they've got to that point, they were able to just settle a little bit and be a little bit more comfortable, and that enabled them to just play quite a pragmatic, safe brand of rugby that they knew that would get them the win. Ultimately, they're going to kick the goals when they're on offer. They kicked the corners, and they ultimately just played sensible rugby. And when we were making errors, and our not heads start to drop, I don't think our heads ever dropped, but we were making too many mistakes, and they were just capitalizing on that. And I think that's when they get their head up, and ultimately that's when we lost the game. However, we finished really well. I think that last 12 minutes or so was quite good. It sort of coincided with Spagnolo coming on, and we win that scrum penalty when he comes on, and that gives us a bit of a lift. But like you said, we were kicking to the corner and we weren't winning that line out when we were quite close to the line. So yeah, I think there was ultimately a 25-minute period in that second half where we made too many mistakes and England capitalised on that. And we've talked about small margins before, and that's what it takes. You know, just handling errors cost you because it gives away territory, it gives away possession, and a team like England or any team in this Six Nations tournament is going to capitalise on that. So that's how the game went ultimately. But, you know, I'm pretty confident that those boys, I take confidence from the fact that they didn't just sort of throw the towel in after that, you know, and they finished quite well, which is what we've become quite used to with this Italian stuff.
Yeah. I just want to add that one little bit to the end of that as well. So Quesada said the thing that he's most impressed with about this team is genuinely not satisfied with the result. Like not necessarily upset, right? Because that's presumptuous, but I think the players felt like they could have got more out of the game.
Yeah.
And they weren't satisfied with a Valiant result and losing bonus point. And that's a mentality change that we've been looking for a long time. So if he's saying that, and, you know, we take what he says as gospel, because why wouldn't we? Then we're moving in the right direction, boys. Like, that's what we want to hear. We don't want to hear Valiant losses now. We want to hear, like, capitalization on winning position. So, I was really happy to hear that. And I think it's something that, for those of you guys who don't look for the post-match interviews and stuff, you probably would have missed that. So it's important to highlight that this team aren't happy with the result that we got against England. And hopefully we see a continuation next week.
And I think that had we not scored that last try, and maybe if we'd conceded and that game had finished up being 34-17, I think it would have been, there'd been an element of more disappointment. I think what Crowley managed to instill in this squad is that belief and that sort of wanting to be as right at the top of their game. They're not going to settle for being Valiant losers. We've used that phrase so many times, and as supporters, we don't want to be doing that anymore, and the players especially don't want to be doing that anymore. So the fact we finished really well, I think, gives quite a big boost, and that losing bonus point sort of psychologically is a big one as well, because it just gives us something to work with going into Ireland, which is ultimately going to be a huge, huge task. We saw what they did in Marseille on Friday night. They tore France apart ultimately, which is quite a scary prospect. Which maybe brings us on quite nicely to maybe touching on the other two games as we look ahead to week two. But before we do, just very briefly on a little bit of team news. Leo Marin and also Canali coming in to the squad for Seb Negri. And I think Tommy Allen's maybe carrying a little bit of a knock from that game. I can't remember whether where he picked that up from. I can't remember too much. Not sure.
Yeah, just on that, I think he was cleared, but I think Marin was always going to get called up, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And yes, Seb played from the first carry of the game, pretty much with dislocated rib cartilage, which is
such a worry.
Nasty injury, to be honest. continue carrying the way that he does. So big props to Seb, but he's probably going to miss at least the game against Ireland on Sunday afternoon.
And on those points, I'd like to ask you, March, what you think, or where you see Marin fitting into this team, and then Otto, you Canali after. So, yeah, March, like, Marin, brilliant player. Where do you see him fitting? Like, do you see him as a 10? Do you see him as a 12? What do you think he can bring?
Well, that's the thing. I think he's a mixture of both. I mean, we've had this with Garbisi as well, haven't we? As in, can we play him as a another distributor, another kicking option at 12, another playmaker? You know, it's most countries seem to have this debate at some point with certain players. At the moment, I just do not see a world in where our midfield isn't Benoncello and Brex. Those two are just, they obviously play for the same club, so it's natural, but they have built this relationship, they have built this chemistry, and they're both just so brilliant, and they're both integral to how we want to play. And I personally, for me, I think they're probably the first two names on the team sheet. So anyone coming in and with ambitions of playing 12, especially, it just seems a long shot. So I think Marin's best bet is at 10. And I do think that I'm still not sold on Garbisi as a 10, and I still don't think we've quite seen him at his very, very best playing in that position. We know what he can do, but his game management, I still think his kicking from hand is, there are some flaws in it, and ultimately that is causing us a few problems, and it did at the weekend as well. So I think Marin has probably got more of a chance at getting some game time as a, maybe off the bench as a 10, but, you know, it's very dependent on who we play, on whether we do a 6-2 or a 5-3 on the bench. That that sort of affect him as well. So that would be my that'd be my opinion on him.
Just as a rogue sort of joker card, Marin at 15, Allen at 10. Thoughts, boys? He's got a big old boot, hasn't he?
And Tommy Allen played really well at the weekend.
Yeah, no,
especially in that first half.
He was brilliant.
I'm of the opinion that Allen has to be on the pitch for us. I don't necessarily know where that is, but the idea of maybe someone else going in at 15, because we're still not sold as Tommy's at 15 either. So it's one of those really. So there's always a potential. I still don't think that 15 is sort of sold on anyone yet at the moment.
I was just thinking there's a bit of a rogue thing. Just table that, but Otto, over to you, man.
No, maybe that can be an option for the summer, or maybe later on during the Six Nations. Probably gonna.
You don't want to put him off against one of the best teams in the world at fullback without him playing there, no? Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, not for now. But look, I can see him maybe being an option from the bench soon, but not yet, because I want to see other people keep playing. I want to see Mori playing more. Seeing another opportunity for him, and man, I don't know the situation about how we're gonna manage the kicking game of Ireland, because that is scary. The kicking game of Ireland, anyway, the way they play, the way they move around,
we have to trust them.
Yeah, right. So it's gonna be interesting how they're gonna understand Pani and Ioane. Ioane a lot of balls under for him. Under the sky, but no, Marin is not now, but he's gonna be soon. But I'm not gonna sell anybody else. Where at 12, right? 12 moving.
You convinced at 12.
The Farrellish. I like that idea for him. I really like it.
Let's see. So what are we thinking about Sunday? I think it's probably fair to say that no one expects us, and I don't think maybe even we're sat here expecting too much from Sunday, other than just seeing us continue to progress and continue to improve on trying to get those mistakes out of our game. And I think we're under no illusions that if Ireland play as well as they're capable of, we're not going to win the game. I think it's as simple as that. And I don't think there's any shame in that, because Ireland on their day will be every single team on the planet, ultimately. So it's a bit of a free hit, maybe, Sunday?
Free hit, but you know what? If we defend well, I know what we can do in attack, but the focus can be better. Can we improve our discipline in defense? That is key. Of course, the breakdown battle against the Ireland is going to be even more than what was playing against Itoje, Anderil, Ben Earl. Those players that put their hands everywhere, they have more of those in Ireland. And still, I didn't watch the France-Ireland game yet, so I'm going to be... Maybe I'm more... it's an illusion, because I didn't watch the game.
More optimistic.
Yeah, too much, but I'm
If you want to be optimistic about Sunday, then don't watch the game.
Okay. Okay, so I will watch it. So
don't watch.
I'm going to be F'd in some way.
Yeah.
I've got to be honest, boys. I'd be disappointed if we don't back it up. Not as in, like, necessarily even a win, or, like, not even necessarily, like, scoring a massive amount of tries, but if we manage to get a losing bonus point against Ireland, like, people start worrying about us, you know?
There's definitely no reason why we can't.
Well, that's sort of the point, right? Like, if we're saying, okay, cool, this is the first step in a long, old journey, I want the next step to be of equal measure. I don't want it to be like last year, where, admittedly, like we got it wrong against England, right? But we had that amazing game against France, really unfortunate at the end, and then we're now in a position where it's sort of the same, right? We're now looking at one of the best teams in the world. Obviously, it was a different step last year to, you know, somewhere where we're probably expected to be more competitive last year than we were at the time. But this year, I just want to see us compete. I want us to compete against. If, for example, we had exactly the same result as last year against Ireland, regardless of, you know, loss or win or whatever, now, then actually we take momentum into a hurt France. We take momentum into Scotland, who, as we were going to go on to speak to, didn't have, they weren't, you know, they didn't look great. And then obviously Wales, who are growing, and they grow in the tournament. So like, if we can build momentum, we need a good step in the right direction. And that's what's important for me. I want to see us back it up. I'm desperate to see that.
Yeah. And I think the way this tournament works, it probably works quite nicely for us in a, if you're looking at it on the reverse, on the flip side of, yes, we play England, Ireland and France the first three games, and then we play those two games we look at probably the most as places, you know, playing Scotland in front of a apparently close to a sellout crowd in Rome, and then Cardiff, where we've won before recently. So that sort of gives us something to work to. You know, we've got Ireland and France next, a France side that were really, really poor on Friday night, really, really poor. Obviously, Ireland's sort of a superpower, but like you said, if we can compete there and go and play France as well, and then we're into those two games. So it should work out.
So we're going to win against France, guys, in France.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm leaning towards. But I mean, having said that, you do look at France now and go, there is going to be a lot of pressure on them in that game when they play us, especially if they go to Murrayfield, where they've got a really poor record. If they go there and lose, and they're coming into playing us in front of a home crowd on the back of two defeats, you know what the French crowd are like when things aren't going well.
You know, if things are going well, I just hope someone goes soldiery and goes like that.
Yeah.
My man, I hope somebody's gonna smash him so hard. I hope so hard somebody's gonna smash.
So his ancestors feel it and understand what he's done. He's got Italian ancestry, right? Like, that was disrespect to them as well. But yeah, for me, like I said, I just same length step. We keep making the same length step game after game. Boys, we've got two winnable games at the end. Sure. Two, like, potentially we've got three winnable games. Like, Jamie George, without an ounce of irony, said, I think Italy are gonna, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Italy win a couple of games along the way, the Six Nations. And I think they understood, like, for those of you guys that, like, oh, England play poorly, if the captain of the English team, who has played there over 100 caps, right, like, says that this team is good enough to win games, that doesn't mean England played poorly. It means that actually,
it's not only fair play by Jamie George.
Yeah, no, it was. Genuine. Do you know what I mean? Like, these boys can do some damage. So let's back it up, boys.
Yeah, and I think that is what I've seen a lot of, is people are saying, actually, England, I know some people have looked at it on the face of it and thought, oh, only beating Italy by 3 points, they were shit. I've seen quite a lot of, actually, England played well, and that was a good win. You know, the general feeling was, with people that know the game and are sort of got their heads screwed on, saying,
that's the point.
That was a good win.
Know the game.
Exactly. You know, your casual rugby Six Nations fan that comes around once a year looks at that and goes, oh God, we only just beat Italy. We're in the mud. But
March. Yeah. In Italy, they are crucifying Allan for the kick when he was 100%, and now he's also top scorer, top try scorer. So, I mean, il tifoso occasionale porta male. The occasional fan is the worst fan. So
yeah, of course. The people that are in the know, and the sort of the journalists in and around that England team, you know, saying that was a good performance and actually a really good win for England. So I think that says quite a lot about where we are and what we're doing. So we talked a little bit about France and Ireland, given that we haven't all watched it sort of in detail. Mike?
The only thing I'll say on Ireland real quick, because obviously we are they're the focal point for this week. We need to find a way of controlling Gibson Park. He's just different grade. He must be up there with the best scrum half now that Dupont's obviously tearing it up to lose and on his way to the sevens. But like, he just he just changes the game, and it actually doesn't matter if you have an inexperienced fly half, because he's just so good. He's just too good.
But how do you do that? I mean, how do you stop a nine behind? That's what I was going to say. I mean, Ottavio, how do you stop Gibson Park behind such a dominant pack from doing what he does? Because ultimately, I feel like as long as that pack give him the ball and give him that protection, there is very little you could do about him.
That's you already answered to this. I mean, the pack. You have to stop the pack. Okay. You have to be smart in the way you want to play. You have to be really good and square until the last second in last moment in defense, because the forwards are so good moving the ball in, out, behind, the pull pass, all this kind of stuff. They are great and they are dominant, as you said. So if we can slow there, of course, he has to work back, they have to reload, they have to reorganize, and probably in that way you can stop Gibson Park, a player that loves to play with momentum, like all the nines, they want to play with momentum, but he can really be a pain in the ass, guys, because he knows also how to run the perfect line.
Is it a case of really competing at the breakdown and trying to be as aggressive as possible at the breakdown? Is that the best way to try and get to it?
For me, slowing down doesn't mean that you have to be aggressive for everything, but you have to be the right player slowing the situation there. Give example, Maru Itoje is really, really good also when he's in attack to slow the other one to reload around. So you have to be able to put the hands, but be still bothering. It has to be hard to be moved from the breakdown area, always on the legal way, you know. But
well,
that
the point you made is the most important point, I think. Like, if we look at England, the reason England had so much success was we were unable to slow their ball down. They reverted back to old Borthwick. They know that inside out is what got them to, you know, third place and 1 point away from South Africa. That's how they played against us in that 20-minute mark. That 20-minute stint from 40 to 60 minutes. And it's because we're too concerned about getting pinged for slowing down the ruck. Whereas actually, if you look at Itoje, and Itoje is a perfect example, Itoje will give penalties away, but he always nets positive. Like, he'll always net positive because he'll stop a try, or like he'll get back up on his feet and do a legal jackal. He just nets positive. If we say he gave away three penalties, but actually stopped two tries, and you take that, I would anyway. Like, if you've given three penalties away, but you've, do you know what I mean? So we need to get better at that. Like, we need to, in Italian, we need to be forward. What's that in English? We need to be sly. We need to be sly. Like, hey, no, we do. We do. We need to learn how to be sly at the breakdown.
Of course,
on the edge of
sly
the
against us.
Richie McCaw.
How sly was he? He was the slimiest little, but
who is our most effective in that position? Because for me, Zuliani is probably our best breakdown player, but rarely does he get an 80-minute game, or rarely does he get to go from the start. Is there a case that Zuliani plays or starts? But is that ever going to happen, given that he's our captain and plays in that position as well?
Well, I think there's a case that he could start.
Well, let's see this week. This week is going to be really key, because we don't going to have Seb Negri. So who's going to be picked? Izagor at six?
Izagor.
I think it's going to be generally Izagor there. But of course, then he's going to have at least out of 40 minutes. But he can be better, because this week, Zuliani didn't show that the Kraken, that he is the guy that can pick the ball there. He gave away two penalties, which is a lot of penalties, think about the time he played. But of course, he's going to be much, much better. He's going to be hungry, and he know Irish players, because he play against them. So that is another thing that is a URC team at the end. So he can do it. He knows he can be better than that.
Mm. I think... Mike. Go on, Mark, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, should we finish off just touching on the Wales Scotland game very, very quickly before we yeah. finish?
Yeah,
you've watched
I'll say one point on Zuliani if I can real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Zuliani, Varney, the players that didn't have the best game, right? It's important for us to build them now, like build them up. So if there's an opportunity for us to play them next week, we absolutely should, in my eyes anyway.
Oh, right.
And that's my opinion on it, because we know what Varney can do at his best and we need to get him there, mate. Like, we're just clearly he's lacking a bit of confidence. We just need to get him there. We need to build him. Anyway, that was the point. You said you wanted to quickly jump just to...
The crazy game in Cardiff. Now, for what was it, about 45 minutes, it was just total and utter demolition job from Scotland. And then for half an hour, it was just the complete opposite. So it was a weird, weird game in which I think Finn Russell afterwards said, it feels quite disappointing, actually. We've won the game, but there was an element of disappointment from Scotland that they went from probably looking at absolutely stuffing Wales and putting in a really huge performance to scraping past Wales by the skin of their teeth. And then on the flip side, Wales looking like staring down the barrel of a huge defeat, and everyone all of a sudden thinking Wales are going to be wooden spoon, to they get 2 points out of the game and probably ultimately end up feeling the better of the two teams at full time.
Yeah. Yeah. The point in which they got the turnaround is a lot of momentum gain for them, because like you said, they worked it out. Wainwright is, well, he's the player that I always thought he was going to be, right? Like, the player that every Wales fan who've been following him for a long time, every coach said that he could be. He played that game. If he can play like that, and he's been playing so well this season as well. He was just brilliant. He was just absolutely brilliant. He spearheaded a lot of what was good in that. So, a young team, very similar to us, right? A young team, like, they need to learn how to win. They need to learn how to develop in certain situations. And yeah, that was good. It was really impressive. I think it's odd, right? Like, because there is an element that it just fell to pieces for Scotland as well. But I think that's because of how good Wales were, and like how much front football and how basically all the stuff we were talking about. Like, they couldn't slow the ruck down. So it was an interesting game, mate. And I think actually, yes, Wales would take a lot out of that game, but if there was any game to do it against for Scotland, it was Wales, right, for them. I think if they played like that against us, right, and put their foot up, I think actually we probably would have ended up winning that game. So I think Wales, where it's slightly more disjointed, they've got a lot of young players uncapped. It's less cohesive than us because of obviously the Benetton contingent. It was the right time for them to make that mistake. So both teams are going to come out inevitably a lot stronger from it. Wales hopefully ride some momentum into next week.
Yeah. And I think the concerning bit will be for Scotland is how sort of experienced and together that squad is. So for them to fall apart like they did will probably concern Gregor Townsend considerably. But obviously they did still win the game. So as disappointing as they'll be with that second half, they still win the game, and ultimately they're still on to win this tournament potentially. So they have France up this weekend in Murrayfield, which has been quite a decent game for them in recent years. France's record in Scotland is not fantastic. Wales go to England, and again, which could be, you know, if Wales carry that second half into playing England, that could potentially be a really good game as well. And then we play, I don't want to say best team in the world, they didn't win the World Cup, did they? But feels like playing the best team in the world on Sunday, given that form. So pretty yeah. daunting. Otavio, you will have a lot of fun watching that Scotland-Wales game, though. That was good.
You'll
enjoy that.
Nice. Looking forward to that, to see how we're going to manage to win against them both.
Absolutely. Otavio's going to plan how Italy are going to win the rest of our games in this tournament. Boys, I think brings us quite nicely to a close.
couple of things, Marsh, before
closing. Go.
Couple of stuff. First, happy birthday, David Sisi. Today.
Yes.
Il frigo.
Il frigo. Buon compleanno al frigo. Questo è importante. That's important. And we spoke about Seb Negri, friend of the podcast, playing in that way. I'm going to give you a couple of stats to understand. The guy with a dislocated cartilage, cartilagine, how you say that in English?
Cartilage. Yeah.
No cartridge.
No, not an ink cartridge. No.
He failed. But anyway, he was the second player for meters carried into contact for Italy. The first one was Menoncello and Monti, Ioane 17. But we know Monti. You know, that tackle means that a lot of meters he did, they were carried into contact and stuff. And he runs into contact twice time, which is something. I'm just thinking about my ribs. I cannot
believe it's hurting my ribs just thinking about it, really. What a 47 beast.
47 meters carried, 16 tackles made, 14 ball played with hands. So, Seb, you're a machine. I hope you rest up because we need you always.
Yeah.
But we're happy because we have Izagor this week to see, guys. I'm looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to that. Him against McCarthy in the open field. I don't know why I think that.
I just want to quickly say on Izagor, like, he, again, like we were talking about Spagnolo debut, fair play. Like, absolutely fair play. He came on like a raging bull against the physical England team, and he proved why he was part of the selection. And yeah, I'm excited too, boys. I think he's for those of you guys who haven't been watching him at Benetton this year, he's one to look out for. So,
yeah, I picked him out as my sort of player to watch this tournament. So I'm really after Menoncello, of course, but Izagor, I'd love to see him get a full crack at Ireland. That would be to watch him go up against the best in the world would be really, really cool. Like we mentioned earlier, if you haven't, do go and look back at our socials. We did try and churn out as much as we possibly could, given the boys were on a weekend booze up in Rome and I was at home. So we did our best. There is some really good stuff, and we are hopefully looking forward to another week of doing the same. I think me and Mike are hopefully in the process of getting some press passes for the game in Cardiff. So fingers crossed we'll be able to do the same in Cardiff as well at the end of the tournament. But all of those socials, go and have a look, Fratelli di Rugby. Go and have a look at those and catch up on everything we produce from the weekend. We look forward to this weekend. But yeah, thank you for joining us, and we'll speak to you all again very, very soon.